Paul's getting ready to mail this letter, send this letter. And he's in chapter 15 now. There's just a little bit left to go. So the letter's just about to be sent off. And he uses a word here, the word now in verse 25. It's a special word. They have a regular word for now, and then they have a word where they put a little I on the end of it, and it means just this moment. So now means I'm leaving for Jerusalem, and it's imminent. Okay, it's all done. The 1 Corinthians 16:1, now concerning the collection for the saints, that was a year earlier. Now he's collected the money for the saints, and now I go to Jerusalem. So it tells us that Paul is finishing his letter, and after he finishes that letter, he's going to be going to Jerusalem. And when he gets there, he's going to be ministering to the saints. Now, you remember the word deacon? We talked a lot about deacon. There's about six words for servant in the New Testament. And the most personal, this would be like your butler. This would be like your waiter when you go to have dinner. This is somebody who's very interested in taking care of your needs. What does a waiter have to do to get a tip?
Good service.
Yeah, and that's this word. So this is a word that the Greek-speaking people would use when they wanted to express a deep personal interest in the person they're serving. So they have a word for slave, which is where you capture someone and you bring them back and you force them to serve you. Is that a pleasant servitude? Is that a loving servitude? Clearly not, but this one is. All right, let's go ahead and take a quick look at some of the verses in between now. Well, I'll tell you what, let me put a couple of things up, and then I'm going to come up here in a minute. But I think we all are aware that Paul had three journeys. His first journey, then the Jerusalem conference, then the second journey where he ends up in Corinth for a year and a half. Then he goes back to Jerusalem, then he comes back again, and now he's in Ephesus. And how long does it say he stayed in Ephesus?
2 years.
2 years. Okay, well, actually 3 months, and then he separated disciples into the school of Tyrannus, and he taught there for 2 years. So during that two-year period, everything is going very, very well. And when he writes the 1 Corinthian letter in 1 Corinthians chapter 16, this is toward the middle of the page, I will tarry at Ephesus until Pentecost. And what are the circumstances there when he writes the 1 Corinthian letter? A great and effective door has opened to me. But there are many adversaries. Now in Acts chapter 19, the silversmiths proclaim that what has Paul done to them with his preaching of the gospel? Yeah, he's about to put them out of business. They're really angry. So for 2 hours in an assembly, they are yelling out, "Great is Diana of the Ephesians." And Paul wants to go in, but what do the leaders tell him? Don't go in there, Paul. They'll kill you. So everything changes after that riot. So the riot has to occur after the 1 Corinthian letter is sent, because everything's good when he finishes the 1 Corinthian letter. Notice again that where he says this is in the last chapter. So he's finished with the book and he's getting ready to send it. And everything's going well. Well, it doesn't stay well. And so the riot occurs, and then in 2 Corinthians now, chapter 1, we do not want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia. All right, so that's the riot. And we were burdened beyond measure, above strength, so that we despaired even of life. So was that a pretty tough time for Paul? Yeah, see, and that happened after the 1 Corinthian letter, because as I say, when he wrote that letter, everything was going fine. All right. Then in 1 Corinthians chapter 2, that was in 1 Corinthians chapter 1. I'm sorry, 2 Corinthians chapter 2. Furthermore, when I came to Troas to preach Christ's gospel, and a door was opened to me by the Lord, I had no rest in my spirit because I did not find Titus my brother, but taking my leave of them, I departed for Macedonia. So he leaves Ephesus. He goes to Troas. Let me put that up here. I'm going to skip that. We'll come back to that in a minute. All right, so here's that map, just a little bit bigger. And here is Ephesus. That's number one. That's where he went. Then he went to Troas. And he couldn't find Titus, so he came over into Macedonia. Now there's three churches in Macedonia, Philippi, Thessalonica, and Berea. So he spends some time in Thessalonica, and that's where we are now in 2 Corinthians. So that's where he wrote that letter. Because see, he's there when he writes this. He says in the next verse, 2 Corinthians chapter 7, "For indeed, when we came to Macedonia, our bodies had no rest. We were troubled on every side. Outside were conflicts, inside were fears. Nevertheless, God, who comforts the downcast, comforted us by the coming of Titus." So now, here comes Titus. So Paul's in Ephesus, we have a riot. He goes to Troas, Titus isn't there. If you really read through the letter, I think what he's afraid of is the Corinthians killed him. He was afraid that the Corinthians had... Has that ever happened before, where somebody stones a preacher because they don't like his message? Yeah, so Paul's really concerned. He outside or fighting, inside or fears, And then Titus comes. And when Titus comes, he says, "The Corinthians have accepted your letter," chapter 7, "the worldly sorrow, the godly sorrow, they have cleared themselves and everything." He's so happy now. So he sits down and writes a 2 Corinthian letter from Macedonia. So now in 2 Corinthians 8, he says, "It is to your advantage not only to be doing what you began and were desiring to do a year ago." So how much time is there between the letter to the 1 Corinthians he wrote in Ephesus, and now he's writing the second letter in Macedonia, and how long does he say it was occurring? A year ago. So everything we read about occurs in 1 year. Then in chapter 9, he says, "Now concerning the ministering to the saints, it is superfluous for me to write to you, because I already told you in the 1 Corinthian letter to do this. For I know your willingness, about which I boast to you to the Macedonians." So he's got to Macedonia telling them, boy, the Corinthians are really going to have, they've really, really done well. Now he has to write that Achaia was ready a year ago, and your zeal has stirred up the majority. "Yet I have sent the brethren, lest our boasting of you should be in vain, in this respect, that, as I said, you might be ready." Because what did he tell them in 1 Corinthians chapter 16? How many collections does he want when he comes? None. It needs to be done when he comes. So he says, "Lest if some Macedonians come with me and find you unprepared, we, not to mention you, should be ashamed of this confident boasting." So, in 1 Corinthians, he's in Ephesus, the riot occurs, he has to leave, he goes to Troas, he doesn't find Titus, he comes to Macedonia, and until Titus comes, he's deeply concerned. When Titus comes, he sits down and writes the 2 Corinthian letter a year after he wrote the 1 Corinthian letter. Now, when we come to Romans, let's go ahead and turn the page. Okay, so look at this section right in the middle, toward the top of page 2. Those little ministering to the saints. So in Romans 15, "I go to Jerusalem ministering to the saints." Has he gone yet? No. Has the Corinthians given the money yet? Well, he says, "Now I'm ready to go." So they have given the money. He's ready to go. Then chapter 15 again, "A certain contribution for the poor among the saints. And then the ministration which I have for Jerusalem may be acceptable to the saints." So 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, and Romans are all tied together by the contribution that is to be given to the saints. So what I would like to do now is I'm going to come up here for just a minute because I want to be able to see what we're talking about. So here's what he says in the book of Acts. After the uproar had ceased, Paul called the disciples to himself and embraced them. So he's in Ephesus, now he's getting to relief. He comes to Troas. He can't find Titus. He departs to go into Macedonia. Now when he had gone over that region and encouraged them, he came to Greece, which is where Corinth is. So then he stayed 3 months in Corinth. And when the Jews plotted against him as he was about to sail to Syria, he decided to return through Macedonia. These men going ahead, waiting for us at Troas, but we sailed away from Philippi after the days of unleavened bread, and in 5 days We joined them at Troas, where we stayed 7 days, and then from Miletus, he sent to the elders at Ephesus, and then he gives them the information that he wants them to have. So, basically, what we see is Paul is in Ephesus, and while he's in Ephesus, you can't hardly see that. I thought it would come out a little better. It should have gone with a different color. But anyway, here's Ephesus, 2 years in Ephesus, writes the First Corinthian letter. The door closes. He goes to Troas, no Titus. He goes to Macedonia, whether to Philippi or to Berea or to Thessalonica, we really don't know. But he stays there. Titus comes. He writes the Second Corinthian letter. And then at some point, he comes down to Corinth, stays for 3 months. Then they're planning to sail this way, but there's a plot. So they go back up here, come back around to Troas. Now, you remember what happened at Troas on the first day of the week?
Paul preached till midnight.
He preached till midnight, but what did they come together for?
Lord's Supper.
Okay, this is the institution of the Lord's Supper. This is one of the main passages we use. Upon the first day of the week, we came together. The brethren at Troas came together to break bread. Then he, wrong button. Okay, so then he goes down to preach to the elders at Ephesus in chapter 20. Then he sails back to Jerusalem where he's put into prison. All right, so we tie all this together. And first, Paul's at Ephesus. And I know I'm repeating the reading, but I just want to give you guys a clear picture. So when Paul's in Ephesus, he writes the First Corinthians letter. He tells them, everything's going wonderful. I'm going to stay here until Pentecost. Everything, we got a great door here. Well, the door closed. So then in the Second Corinthians letter, when he opens that, he says, we don't want you to be ignorant, brethren, of our trouble which came to us in Asia, for we were burdened beyond measure. So that takes us from Ephesus again to Troas and then up here to Philippi or to Macedonia. Then, when I came to Troas, well, you know, I've already covered all this, so let's just look at it on the map. Then he comes, talks about this year ago. So a year has passed since he wrote the First Corinthian letter, and he confidently spoke of their obedience, but now he's afraid they won't be ready. So then we read that after this uproar had ceased, they're ready. He stays 3 months in Corinth. Then he goes back to Macedonia and then in Philippi. And then he is now, we're ready to tie this into Romans. But now, at this moment, I go to Jerusalem, ministering unto the saints. So, the First Corinthian letter from Ephesus. The Second Corinthian letter from Macedonia a year later. Then he goes to Corinth, he collects all the money, and in that 3 month period, what does he do? Because he says, now I'm going to Jerusalem. So now he writes the book of Romans. So 1 Corinthians in Ephesus, a year later, the 2 Corinthian letter from Macedonia, and then maybe 3 months after that, either in Corinth or Macedonia, he writes the Roman letter. So that's kind of what we're looking at. And then, of course, here's what he tells the elders at Ephesus. I go bound in the Spirit unto Jerusalem. So, had he gotten to Jerusalem yet? So, he hadn't gotten there yet. So, Paul is talking to the elders. He's written Romans. He's written 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians. He says, I'm going bound in the Spirit, and I know that bonds and affliction abide me. In other words, when I get to Jerusalem, what's going to happen? 2 years in Caesarea, and 2 years in Rome. So, quickly summarizing, we see that the journey, let me just finish all of this. So, and again, I'm not going to go over this, you guys are probably getting tired of it, but this takes about a year. Okay, any questions on that at all? Rob?
I know I brought this up a couple of weeks ago, but you know, the providence of God and all this. You were saying he was... Can you imagine going into a city looking for somebody? I mean, you can't call him. You're looking around. I don't know. And then to say, okay, he's not here. Go somewhere else and find him. Yeah. I mean, that's the Holy Spirit, providence of God.
It is.
And for, you look at all those journeys, how, and read about them in Acts and so forth. It's just, we're so thankful for God and the Holy Spirit and how they did all that. And then we say, well, how does that apply to us today? I really don't know exactly, but other than we just need to be ready for if God would like to use us in any way, you know?
Right. Yeah. Okay, so let's go back to this point in the middle of page 2. You notice that this contribution in 1 Corinthians, 2 Corinthians, and Romans is taken where?
To Jerusalem.
To Jerusalem. And who's it given to?
The saints.
The saints. Do we have any indication at all here that any of this money was going to people in the world?
No.
No. As a matter of fact, as you go through the New Testament, you find nowhere where the Lord's church is giving money to those people who are outside of the church. And of course, this is one of the disagreements that has arisen in some of the churches today. Some churches have food pantries. Some churches want to go out and use the Lord's money to take care of the physical needs of the poor. You know, you take that far enough out, what does the Salvation Army exist for?
Yeah, helping people.
See, they're helping the poor. And they're using it as an evangelistic tool. We find that anywhere in the New Testament? No. Paul preached the gospel. There's no other motivation. If you won't obey the gospel on the basis of belief in the gospel, and somebody throws meals in or somebody throws money in, do we have the same gospel? It wouldn't be the same gospel. So anytime a church wants to sweeten the pot, so to speak, wants to give one more reason why somebody might want to obey the gospel, which is not just preaching the gospel, we just don't see that in the New Testament. And so it sounds like a good idea, but it actually waters down. Did Paul spend a lot of time on this in 1 Corinthians chapter 1 trying to reveal to us that human wisdom is out of place in the church? That God chose foolish things and weak things and base things and things don't make any sense? And why did he choose all those things? Put to shame the wise. So when I see somebody who's so wise today that he's going to change the gospel in order to bring more people in, what am I thinking? He's ripping the screen, right? God put a screen there so that certain people wouldn't come in. If you tear open the screen, you're going to get more people? Well, you'll get more people, but are you getting God's people? So you're not. So continuing on now at the bottom of page 2, it has been the good pleasure. Now, that's an interesting word. This is the word, remember when God said, "This is my beloved in whom I am well pleased." That's this word. And it means that it's a pleasurable thing. It's a joyful thing. Now, there's some commands that are onerous, right? Does the Lord put anything in the scriptures you find difficult to do? Anybody here take good pleasure in going out with church discipline, having to sit down and talk to somebody about their sin? Is that a good pleasure command? No. But this one is. This is a good pleasure command to be able to help other people. So it's been the good pleasure. Let's go ahead and go to page 3. Of Macedonia and Achaia. Now, which churches are in Macedonia?
Philippi.
Okay. Philippi.
Berea.
Thessalonica.
Berea.
And Berea. All right. Who's in Achaia? Corinth. Possibly, I can't think of the name of it now. Cenchrea, is it? Yeah, having shaved his head in Cenchrea. Yeah, so Cenchrea. There's probably a church there as well. Where's Galatia? What did he say in 1 Corinthians chapter 16? As I gave order to the churches of Galatia, so also do you. Why aren't they here? It's been a pleasure of Macedonia and Achaia. Now, if Galatia had done it, would he have overlooked that? So, kind of an interesting question. We really don't know. I've got a few possible answers, but I'm not going to go into them right now. The word contribution is a sad translation. It really is, because it conveys only half of the equation. This is the Greek word for fellowship. It's the same word. You remember in Acts chapter 2, it says they continued steadfastly in the apostles' doctrine, in the breaking of bread, and in fellowship, and in the apostles' teaching. Now, fellowship there and fellowship here are the exact same term. So, in the as we go through, let me just look at this one verse right smack dab in the middle of the page. Howbeit, you did well that you had fellowship, same Greek word, with my affliction. And you yourselves also know, you Philippians, that in the beginning of the gospel, when I departed from Macedonia, no church had fellowship with me in the matter of giving and receiving. Now, is that what's happening here? The Gentiles are giving. What's the church in Jerusalem doing? It's receiving. So, it's a fellowship. And the word fellowship here is, it is, how do I put it? You got somebody over here that has a need, and somebody over here. Let's say tomorrow I want to move a big table in my house, and I can't do it alone, so I need fellowship. So I call Rod or Brian or somebody else here, and I say, can you come over and have fellowship with me? Now, I have the need. What do they have? They have the ability to give. Now, Rob has a saying, don't deny the giver. Is giving a wonderful part of the gospel? Yeah. So when I have a need and I call someone to fulfill that need, are we in fellowship? And is God seeing both sides of that? Now, it depends on what the fellowship is. If it's moving a table, it's not near as critical. But if I'm preaching the gospel to someone and I'm kind of concerned that I need some help, so I call Rob to come over so we can have fellowship. I have a need. He has an opportunity. We work together. Do we both come out ahead? And that's what's happening here. The Corinthians and the people in Thessalonica, they have money. Jerusalem has a need. We are in fellowship. They have the money, they have the need. If we work together, what happens? The need gets fulfilled and the opportunity to give comes alive. Okay, Brian first and then Ray.
So does fellowship, contribution, and communion, are they all sort of similar words?
Yeah, you see this box down here? The same Greek word is used in every one of these verses. So the word communion is a fellowship. The giving on the first day of the week is a fellowship. Because whether it's being given, you see the fellowship in Philippians 4 is the fellowship between a church and a preacher. Do preachers have needs? Can churches fulfill those needs? When churches fulfill the needs of the preachers, are we in fellowship? And Paul says, I'm not seeking the gift. What does he want? The fruit that increases to your account. So by the church giving to the preacher, whatever the preacher does, who gets some of the credit for that? The church that helped make it possible. So we have fellowship. We have lots of fellowships. Jesus was in fellowship with his apostles. Did the apostles have some needs? Could Jesus fulfill those needs? They worked together. But who gave the most? I mean, in this fellowship, who was giving the most? All right, Ray and then Virgil.
Yeah, I was saying to tie this in what you first heard about Salvation Army and giving and how they do it, and also fellowship and how we're individual Christians. If you look at Matthew 6, verses 1 and 2, Jesus is teaching that take heed that you do not you do all for men to be seen by them, otherwise you have no reward of your Father is in heaven, and therefore when thou doest things with arms, do not sound a trumpet before thee, as they hypocrites do in the synagogue in the streets, that they may have glory of men. Verify, I say to you, they have their reward. In other words, when you're giving out, it's got to be an individual thing. Yes, you do fellowship, but it's also individual. You've got to decide in your heart, am I really going to do this for the right reason, fellowship with other, or am I going to do this? Look at me, I'm doing this. Like Salvation Army, and I'm doing this for the church. They do it the right way, they got to tell you.
Right.
Also felt there's a right way and a wrong way as far as giving Jesus.
And that's a good point, Ray. And he goes on to say, what about your left hand and your right hand?
Right. Don't let your left hand or your right hand see.
Okay. Otherwise, you have what?
No. Do it in secret. Don't just say, hey, I'm praying, look at me.
Right. So if you want to be rewarded from your fellowship, who do you want God? Who do you, I see the answer, but who do you want to see the fellowship? God is the only one. That's laying up treasure in heaven. Okay, Virgil?
Yeah, I was trying to pick up on what Ray is saying. I think that probably he's either said or alluding to what I was going to take and say. But with this whole thing, it places a burden on the giver and also on the receiver. We're not going to have any fellowship. But we are instructed in Ephesians 5:10, I believe it is, to have no fellowship with the unfruitful works of darkness. So that means that we have to understand what's going on with this. It can't be just a passing thing. It has to be well thought out. These brethren had, from the time that Agabus put down the word there was going to be a big drought through the worldwide, in Acts 11, there's a lot of time that took place through there before they had to really deliver these funds to where they needed to go.
Right.
So it wasn't something that was just yesterday. It was downstream that this was going to happen. This was a prophecy of God, and they knew it would happen, but they didn't know exactly when.
Right.
So, you know, Virgil makes a good point, because can fellowship be bad?
Yes.
So have no fellowship with what? The unfruitful works of darkness. Does the unfruitful works of darkness need you to come be with them? If you don't come be with them, they're going to persecute you. And do wicked people have a need to go to be in fellowship with that? So there's bad fellowships. Remember 1 John. You have fellowship with us, and we have fellowship with the Father. So that's the kind of fellowship that we want. Patrick, you had a comment?
Yeah, as you all understand, giving is putting us because I base my point on the Bible. Jesus made it very clear in the book of Matthew chapter 5, verse 20, to tell us that giving is very, very important. He said, verse 20, he said, "For I tell you that unless your righteousness surpasses that of the Pharisees and the teacher of the law, you will certainly not enter the kingdom of heaven." See that?
Right.
Giving is very, very important. If you don't do it, according to Jesus, you can't enter heaven. So we should understand that Jesus expects us to go above the Pharisees. That is, if the Jews were getting 10%, Jesus expects us to give more than what? 10%. This is what he's saying. Because that was their righteousness. Because if you look at Luke, there was two men who were in the temple to pray, and he was counting in righteousness. And he gave 10%, which is a part of his righteousness. So Jesus said we should go above them.
Right.
So we should understand that giving is much important as the Lord's Supper. Because the church based on that giving to support the work of the church. Because if you don't give, the world will not grow. So Jesus expects us to give. This is why he opened the door for us, physical and spiritual blessing, so that we can share this blessing with the brethren, so that the work of the Lord can grow fast.
Right, right. And
we talked about that a few weeks ago, that Christians, 10% is a threshold, that would be the very least, but that wouldn't exceed the Pharisees. So we should make sure our giving is higher than that. All right, hang on a second.
Okay.
There's three works the church is involved in, three missions that God gave to the church, and we are in fellowship with all three of them. What are those three missions? Evangelism,
benevolence
of the saints, and
edification.
All right, so do brethren need to grow and learn the scriptures?
Yes.
Yeah. Do, by giving, can we buy the things necessary, the written materials, supporting of the preachers, purchasing a church building, all the things necessary to bring that edification? Does the church have a fellowship then with edification? This church does. How about evangelism? Do we have fellowship with preachers? Yeah, we give and they receive. We had a business meeting on Friday night, and we've decided now to support 45 preachers in Malawi and 5 here. So we're supporting 50 preachers. I just can't even imagine that, but that's what we're able to do. Now, they have a need. We have an opportunity. Will we be rewarded for all the good those preachers do? Yeah. So should we be happy to be giving secretly? Not letting our left hand, giving more than 10%. And then finally, benevolence. Last few years, I think we've sent out over probably close to 35, 40,000 in benevolence to Malawi, to India, and we are actively involved. So the church here has some wonderful opportunities to be in fellowship, and the brethren here always rise to the occasion. And so we should feel pretty good about that. Rob, you had a comment?
Yeah, and you went where I was thinking, because terms have meanings, fellowship, context. You know, I talked to somebody at work, and, oh, what'd you do this weekend? I was in fellowship with the church I go to. Well, I know what he's talking about. He's talking about they had a meal downstairs, and they ate. That was their fellowship.
Right.
Well, that's not the spiritual fellowship that Christians... Now, some of you might say, sir, you're telling me you never eat with a brother? No, that... But we need to be very careful how we use words and make sure the people that hear them understand them, because you could use the word fellowship to somebody that doesn't know better, and they said, yeah, you have fellowship, Holly Street? We sure do. Oh, come on down. Well, where are we eating at? It's just, so we got to understand these things.
Right. Yeah, and fellowship is based, like the apostle said, we are of God, and we are in fellowship with you if you do what?
Fellowship.
We are of God. He who hears us hears God. He who does not hear us does not hear God. By this we know the spirit of truth and error. So our fellowship is based on being built on the apostles and apostles and prophets, Christ being the chief cornerstone. So, good point. That's exactly right. David, are you changing position?
Yes.
Oh, okay. No question? No comment? Okay. Sorry, I do not want to overlook you. Charles.
Yeah, I'd just like to ask a question here. When we're talking about, fellowship and giving and things like that, when we give, and we're doing this with other congregations, you know, we have other people and everything. Now, when we stand before the Lord, are we saying that we're doing that because of this is what the church is doing, or is this an individual that is doing that and is part of a church that we attend? What I'm getting at is sometimes, you know, I feel like that I could be probably doing more as an individual, not to say that I want to be more than anyone else or anything like that. But what I'm saying is, yes, I can give, and then we give, we help somebody else in another congregation or things like that. But it matters. I'm not really sure just how to phrase that, but when I stand before the Lord, what did you do? Yes, Lord, I gave to the church, and then the church gave to some other people and things like that. But you as an individual, what kind of answer do we have? You know, because see, a lot of people will do that, and they're looking at the fact that, okay, well, the church is doing this. The church is doing it, and the church should be doing it. That's part of the worship that we do help each other. But you as an individual, what can you do?
Right.
In other words, we can't go beyond, if you want to use that terminology, of what we're doing as a group. But see, a group is not going to be there in the judgment. I can't blame you. You can't blame me.
Right.
So that's what my point is. I hope it.
No, I understand exactly what you're saying, and it takes us back to Galatians chapter 6. As we have opportunity, let us work that which is good to who? To all men, especially to those of the household of faith.
Right.
Now, in Jerusalem, because of the dire needs, the brethren there were selling all their possessions, selling their land, selling their property. What do they got left? So they couldn't do what you're talking about. They were giving it all to the church because the church had a need which was more important than any other need that was in existence at that time, because the gospel had to get out. So sometimes the church needs to get all of our money. And if the church gets all of our money to do that work, we're in fellowship with it, and all the reward that the church would receive, each individual here who made it happen would receive. Now, if someone comes and I see someone in a need who's not a member of the church, and I have the money, what should I do?
Help them.
I should help them. So you have to weigh out, Charles, the priorities. The kingdom comes first, right? And when this congregation is what we call deficit spending, in other words, we're spending more than we're taking in because we trust in the Lord, and we'll continue to spend more than we're taking in until what?
It's gone.
Till it's gone, and then we'll have to write the people and say, look, we did the best we could for as long as we could, and then we ask the brethren, look, brethren, can you dig a little deeper? And at some point, the brethren say, yeah, we can dig deeper, but that's going to mean we can't do what you're talking about anymore because all of our money is going into that. Now, for me, that's more important. And sometimes I get needs from Africa, and I see needs here. What do I say? Anybody can do the needs here. Who can do those needs in Africa? See, I'm only one right now. So I'm going to send it there. So you just have to weigh things out, Charles, and you go before the Lord and you say, Lord, I did the best I could. Lord may say, you know, you should have done this instead of this. Well, I'm sorry, Lord, I made a bad decision, but
and,
I still.
And the same point is like your household, when you have a situation in your own house where you need to take care of some needs or whatever, you know, then you're going to make sure that those needs in your household is taken care of.
Yeah. Now we're at 1 Timothy 5.
Right, yeah.
If you don't provide for your own, especially your own household, you're what? So, I'm sorry, I can't give it to you because I'm already giving it to the Lord. What did the Lord say about that in Matthew 15 and Mark 7? See, the Pharisees were saying, look, you don't have to help your mom and dad because you're already giving it to the Lord. And what does Jesus say about that? You're violating one of the Ten Commandments. All right, George, you had a comment?
Yeah, I think it's somewhat conjecture, but the giving is not that Christians are required to do is not all financial. A lot of our giving is our time and efforts to preach, to teach, to help others, and so forth. And also, you were mentioned a minute ago, the poor among the saints that are at Jerusalem. What you said was accurate at one time, but I think that the saints at Jerusalem at this particular time of this writing, the people who had been spending their money because they were staying in Jerusalem instead of going back home and so forth, that had pretty much gone away because most of the Christians had left Jerusalem because of persecution earlier, if I understand the book of Acts correctly.
A person I had this conversation the other night because he had the same question. And when Herod killed James and the brethren were praying in Jerusalem, the church was there. When in Acts 15, Paul and Barnabas were told to go to Jerusalem, who did they assemble with? The apostles and elders of the church of Jerusalem. So the church of Jerusalem, matter of fact, when Paul gets there, he said, you see how many myriads.
Well, I agree that they still existed. That's not my point. They did. Most of the people who were giving away all their money had... That had already happened years ago.
I'm sure they would have come back, George. I mean, if you were banished from here, would you never come back here again? I mean, this is where you live. This is where you grew up. Well, maybe you didn't grow up here, but this is where you've been for a long time. All right, that it could be. But at the time, the money's going to the needy saints in Jerusalem. All right, well, I think we're just going to end up with comments. Patrick, and then Virgil, and then whither then, we do not know. Go ahead, Patrick.
Fellowship for one another. If you all understand that, we have fellowship not only to one another, but to the Heavenly Father. But in John chapter 1 verse 3, it says we also have fellowship with the Father and our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. So if you look at the book of Acts chapter 10, you see Cornelius have fellowship with the Father because he gave to the poor, to the needy. and you pray. And based on that, what happened, we saw that he had what? Fellowship with the Father. The Father had one showing a vision. You see? So if we give contribution to our world, to the church, to one another, to help those who are in need, we should all understand that we're also having fellowship with the Father. Because it's the Father who commands us to do so.
Right. Yeah, that's exactly right. Virgil?
Yeah, it's an interesting discussion that we got going. The church, like say here at Holly Street, yeah, we need to take it and reach out whenever we get the word that something is going astray or needs help and that kind of stuff. And if we can scripturally take part in it. And I use that term scripturally for a definitional term, that there's things that take place wherever that is not a scriptural need. Needy saints is a specific type of a saint that has a need to sustain life. Not that they need to take and paint their house or something like right. that. And these kind of things, they come before us, and we need to take and recognize that we have a responsibility. Like when we take and send money to another church, that is goes to the saints in that congregation to supply a need that that church isn't able to fulfill.
Right.
And then it only goes to them by request. We don't go knocking on the door and saying, "Hey, you need some money." No, that's not in the picture.
Right.
And these little things like this is what got the Lord's people years ago all tied up in knots. Whether we want to face that or not. I sat in on some of those meetings myself, and I know exactly what takes place, and the emotions are just overflowing in to the, and it's difficult to sort through a lot of that. But it all boils back down to some basic principles. Needy saints
right.
that the church sends its money to only by request, not just throw out a fish hook. Oh, yeah, you're needy. Okay, we're going right. to... You know, people think different today. Yeah. Anyway, I'll shut up.
Okay. All right. Let's go ahead and see if we can do verse 27. No, I guess we won't. All right, we'll pick up with verse 27 next week. And, go from there. Thanks, everybody.